Hello, listeners of the Bylines Network podcast. Welcome to a brand new episode. This week, we are talking about the government's rolling back on net zero commitments, why this may be, and why this is an awful idea. So, we thought that maybe we would talk a bit about the backstory behind what possibly prompted these rollbacks, and talk about EULAs and clean air zones, or as I'm going to be referring to them from now on, CAZ. Clean air zones are effectively an area of any city that is cordoned off by the council, and they say cars made with this specific engine or from this specific year, because they are often one and the same, are not allowed within this section of the city, as a way to like reduce carbon dioxide and nitrogen levels to a level that won't kill people, essentially. I know Bristol has one, Bath has one, Birmingham, Portsmouth, Sheffield, Tyneside. They all have one. And if I remember correctly, there are 320 active clean air zones across Europe. But the one that prompted this recent policy change is EULAs, which is unique to London. And Chris, that's your territory.
This is my favorite thing to talk about. No, but in all seriousness, the announcements made this week by Rishi Sunak it's widely seen as being in response to what happened in the Uxbridge by-election, which you can listen to a previous episode of the podcast to find out about what happened there. But just to summarize, the Conservatives were seen to have held on to that seat due to a section of the vote which was particularly vocal, and the campaigning that was particularly vocal in opposition to the ultra low emission zone, which expanded across the majority of London just after the by-election took place. And it's interesting to look into sort of not historical because it's very recent, but the recent context of this policy being introduced. For example, one interesting fact, which a lot of politicians, including Rishi Sunak and previous prime ministers, which I shall mention shortly, failed to mention, is that the ultra-low emission zone was actually introduced and announced in 2013. And the mayor of London at the time was a certain ex-prime minister called Boris Johnson. When that was introduced, I think the implementation date was 2020. As we all know, he didn't stay as mayor that long. But Sadiq Khan obviously took up the mantle. And as things go in politics, it was all his idea. And the blame lies squarely at his door. The criticism lies squarely at his door. And essentially, that's what spooked Rishi Sunak in terms of these net zero commitments.
It kind of reminds me of the Boris bikes. The Boris bikes weren't Boris Johnson's idea. They were Ken Livingstone's idea. But because they were implemented during Boris Johnson's tenure as mayor of London, they are now given the rather neat nickname, the Boris bikes.
And they are still known as Boris bikes. I think someone tried to change them to Carnsicles. Doesn't quite have the same ring to it. But essentially, yeah, this change in policy direction, which actually has angered quite a lot of people in the Conservative Party and also in across the wider spectrum of actually, it's quite surprising. Rishi Sunak's sort of done quite well in uniting environmental campaigners, the energy industry, and the car industry into going, oh, this doesn't seem like an entirely good idea. This is a bit of a bad plan. And I think it was Yanis Varoufakis, who is the ex-finance minister of Greece, on the television on Sunday saying it takes a special kind of politician to be able to manage that. And he's managed. Who'd have thought it? But yeah, it's concerning. And it's sort of this response to what you would assume is sort of seen as a popular section of the vote, which he's trying to appeal to. And whether that will work, it's unclear. The aim is that people in the red wall will love this stuff, you know. But actually, the polling suggests otherwise. The public are quite supportive of measures like ULEZ, like clean air zones, when the facts are explained and the research shows that these zones work in improving health outcomes, especially in urban areas where there's a high level of poverty and already a high level of sort of poorer health outcomes. Most people are in favor of these things. And it would be interesting, and we'll talk about this later, what the result is expected to be in light of the rolling back of other climate commitments.
But yeah, so I've just looked it up. ULEZ, if you have a car that's made at a certain time, ULEZ would charge you about £12.50 for people driving within the zone with vehicles who are non-compliant, compared to Bristol's one, which is basically just the same, you know, cars made after a certain time. Private petrol cars and diesel cars would be charged £9, and light goods vehicle under 3 tons also £9. Heavy goods, buses and coaches, however, are a neat £100. With certain exceptions made, of course, for like delivery vehicles, I think. But yeah, it's just so yeah. The big deciding factor about, oh, these rollbacks are actually a very, very good idea, would be obviously the local like by-elections happened, and it was Uxbridge, wasn't it? Yeah, it was Uxbridge that the Tories managed to cling on to by about 500 votes or less. And so And there was like a massive anti-ULEZ campaign throughout all of that, to the point where even the Labour candidates said that Sadiq Khan would have to rethink the whole thing, which, quite frankly, I find ridiculous. But that's my personal opinion. Other opinions are available.
As a Labour member, it did make me feel quite uncomfortable. It's a policy that Labour, in principle, as a party and a movement, should be behind. Improving health outcomes, tackling climate change in a progressive way, and ultimately, they decided to throw Sadiq Khan under the bus as a result of that by-election. And actually, it's funny, after that election, so the coverage of it died down, the conversation died down. There wasn't much more conversation about it. So it's funny. It's funny how the narratives change when the spotlight's on you.
Shocker. It just kind of reminds me of like, because there have that this isn't the first time we've had like pushback against low emission zones or clean air zones, because Oxford tried to implement a clean air zone and people lost their minds because they were they there was a movement which had money come from a certain American political party, which conflated the clean air zone rules with this statement that one of the councillors of Oxford said about wanting to make Oxford a 15-minute city. And they used this statement to say, oh, look, they're not going to let anybody outside of like a 15-minute zone. So if you live on the outskirts of Oxford, you're not going to be able to see the city centre ever again. I'll think about the poor single mothers who won't be able to use their car and will have to take the bus.
And this sort of narrative as well. It was that came up a lot around the protests around low traffic neighborhoods, which exist in.
Yeah. So same in Bristol, by the way. They've been trying to implement it on like I think it was like White Ladies Road or something. Like try and make that pedestrianize that. And everyone was just kind of like, oh, think of the businesses though. How will they get traffic in? To which my favorite response is, well, my favorite thought that I've had about that is, so they had drive-throughs. Like, I don't know if you've been to White Ladies Road. That's a very dense place. There's no room for drive-throughs. Anyway, sorry, I interrupted you.
And but on the it's on the 15-minute city point, there's a sort of a darker side of that debate where you have the far right talking about how this is a ploy to control our movements, and you have to get a permit to leave your zone, and if you leave your zone, something bad will happen. Now, I have the pleasure, I should say, of knowing some people who believe in this kind of thing, and when these ideas are taken to task, there's not a lot of substance there. And any sort of rational person would agree that no population would accept measures like that at all. If there was some introduction of you needing a permit to leave your street or your postcode, for example. But for some reason, this idea has sort of rooted itself in the pro-motorist lobby and pro-motorist campaigns that you see against things like ULEZ and clean air zones and low traffic neighborhoods. And that often, as you referred to, it's an American import. These ideas are imported from America and from groups which are climate skeptics, you know, who don't believe in climate change. You think it's all a conspiracy to again control how we live our lives. And so to sort of link both what's happened with the campaigns against ULEZ and clean air zones as a whole, and also the net zero rollbacks, it's not too difficult to see where these sort of shifts have come from or originated from. And they come from quite dark corners of the, well, of the planet.
Yeah. And of course, there's this massive argument about like they don't actually work. To which my reply is, and I'm reading off my own article about the Bristol City Council approving its own clean air zone, about the Bath and Northeast Somerset's clean air zone in, well, Bath. Yeah, a couple of months later, it was already suggesting, yeah, 6 months later, they had a 12% drop of nitrogen dioxide emissions since it was introduced, and non-compliant vehicles entering the zone dropped by 49%, which is less traffic for people to worry about, and less, obviously, less noise pollution to worry about. And I honestly would be surprised if people wanted to get rid of it. Like even the people who, because there is also they're also trying to expand the clean air zone in Bath, and of course people are being like the Oxford people, where it's like, oh look, they don't want disabled people to go into the city centre because there's not good enough protection for them, which is a fair point. I do think that the disabled, what's the word? Exceptions. I do think the exceptions being made for disabled people don't go far enough. That does not mean they don't want disabled people to enter the city centre. Anyway, that is still like a 12% drop in nitrogen dioxide in 6 months. That's still quite good, I think.
And it is astonishing how you have such vocal opposition to policies which it's de it there's clear evidence that these work in improving people's lives, and it's all about, oh, but I can't drive to the shops, which are a 5-minute walk away, like I usually would do, you know.
Was it you who told me that you heard someone complaining that they wouldn't be able to drive their Tesla in ULEZ?
There was somebody talking about that, yeah, and it was sort of like, well, no, that's not actually true because your car's electric, and also if you own a Tesla, you could probably afford to pay £12.50 a day to drive your car anyway.
Moving on to the big crux of the issue that we are currently tiptoeing around days ago, possibly a week. Time has no meaning to me anymore. The Prime Minister decided to announce a rollback on certain net zero targets. While he still said that he supported net zero and he wanted Britain to keep its like role as like leader of green policies in the world, which I honestly thought was a joke.
That's what's
Turns
up.
out I'm the joke. And those rollbacks were a delay in the ban of new diesel in the sale of new diesel and petrol vehicles to 2035, when it was 2030. Delaying the transition away of gas boilers from 2026 to 2035. And of course, no new energy efficient targets on homes. He scrapped those completely. He also then, not him, obviously, but the Conservative Party, CCHQ, on their Twitter, put out a graphic that said that we have conquered these policies, such as a meat tax, seven bins, and banning foreign holidays, which led to a lot of people being very confused because those weren't policies. Like, at best, they were being discussed about, but not taken seriously in any way, shape, or form. And you know Rishi Sunak knows this because when he did an interview with Nick Robertson on the BBC, Nick Robertson pointed this out to him, and you could just hear him like stumbling over his words and squirming in his seat. It was kind of funny. Anyway, shall we talk about why we think this is a bad idea? Because I think it's fair to say we think this is a bad idea.
And I mean, and like I said earlier, that you know that there's been a royal screw up when you've managed to, you know, the energy sector, the automotive sector, and environmental campaigners. And you know, that's what these rollbacks have managed to achieve. To start with, on the ban of new diesel and petrol cars being moved back, there is an argument that that actually won't make much difference, either financially or in terms of emissions. And the reason being is that most people don't buy new cars. They're very expensive. The secondhand car market in the UK is massive. And this ban does not ban the purchase of secondhand cars. So moving this back 5 years doesn't do anything but create uncertainty for the businesses who are already investing a load of money to meet the previous targets, but also doesn't save people money or incentivize manufacturers to make the alternatives cheaper. But the manufacturers are definitely not happy because it's meant that all the investment they've put in to meet these targets is sort of not gone to waste as such, but would mean that it's just changed their plans.
Yeah, like Theresa May introduced these ideas in 2017. Coincidentally, she also introduced the idea of banning gay conversion therapy, and was actually quite supportive of like trans conversion therapy. She was supportive of banning trans conversion therapy and quite supportive of trans rights in general. It's just depressing how far back we've gone. Anyway, but yeah, so she put these policies in place in 2017, which is more or less around the same time like a lot of cities around the UK were declaring a climate emergency. So these companies have had been planning for these changes since 2017. That's 6 years of investment already. And now the Prime Minister has just turned around and just gone, actually, you don't have to do it.
And I think it was Ford that was particularly vocal in its criticism.
Yeah, Ford were particularly vocal in his criticism. Toyota, for the sake of balance, did actually come out in support of these policies. It should also be noted that Toyota already have like a factory open though, and it's getting like a lot of money from the government.
Yeah, the main, I mean, also the conversation is about when you set a target for business, especially a target like there will be no new petrol or diesel cars by this date. That's giving them an ultimatum. And I think looking into this, if a company was still selling brand new petrol and diesel cars, their government would have been fining them £15,000 per car sold. That's a pretty hefty incentive to stop those sales. That was opposed by the current business secretary, Kemi Badenoch. And I'm unsure whether that part of the policy has been moved or changed, but the fact that that date's been moved means that the cost of electric cars will come down slower, and they will remain out of reach for many people who rely on cars to get around and live their lives. But
Yeah, I'm very fortunate that I live in a city with decent public transport, but I'm trying to get my my driver's license, but I'm not going to buy a car. It's too expensive, and the costs additional to it are just like astronomical and well out of reach. So if I do ever move out, I will probably have to get a out of Bristol, I will probably get a car, and I'm hoping that it's going to be an electric car. But yeah, even then, that's still well out of reach. Like e even my parents have, they have an electric car, but they rent it out, and they're better off than me.
but yeah,
Anyway, sorry.
that was a big part of why, and that target was seen as so important, because it would drive down the cost of manufacturing electric cars and that drive down the cost of how they'd be sold. Because when you incentivize business to do things, especially if there's fines involved, they tend to try and avoid those extra costs. And that would mean innovation, it would mean research and jobs being sped up to try and meet those targets. And we're not going to see that now. And
No, and it's the same for it's the same for the transition away from gas boilers. You know, again, these targets were set in 2017, so they were given 11 years to prepare for this. And all it's really done is like create like a lot of uncertainty, which investors don't really like. They like good, solid, stable places to invest their money in. Britain, I think it's fair to say, hasn't been like that state ha been that stable. But like that, this is like the one case where it's just like these are certain rules that we're not going to go from. Oh no, wait, hang on.
And it says
Like
something that.
I guess the one silver lining with like the gas boiler thing is that there is an increase in grants to help transition. But at the same time, a lot of people have argued that this was inevitable because the costs to changing the system is just like already like way too big.
And I mean, on things within the home and boilers and energy efficiency, one of the, I think, the worst part about this announcement was the scrapping of new energy efficiency targets on homes. And that was specifically aimed at private landlords. So they had to have an energy rating or energy performance certificate rating of a certain grade to be able to rent their property out to tenants. And that's been removed with the, of course, motivation and reasoning that it would cause a collapse in the rental market, because is the rental market, it's in such a good state at the moment anyway.
It is.
The housing stock that exists is fantastic and nobody complains. But so you'll continue to have tenants living in extremely poor quality rented housing with next to no rights, because the Renters Reform Bill still hasn't been brought forward and is likely, on a little tangent, likely to be sort of not scrapped, but it's likely to fall by the wayside when we get to the King's speech in November. Depending on if that's included in it, we'll have to see, but it's not looking good. And ultimately, yeah, landlords, yay, you can still exploit your tenants and not insulate the home, not make any improvements at all. It's a win-win for you. But the other part that was sort of, it happened a few days after, but it links in with this, is the government did set up a task force for home energy efficiency, and that's been scrapped completely. Now, I'm sure everyone remembers winter last year and how expensive bills were, and they were still so expensive despite government support being given to many people. The fact that you're abandoning energy efficiency measures is not going to help people with their bills. It's not going to help people with their cold homes. It's not going to help at all. And this will be, I think, the measure that will have the biggest impact on people's lives, people's daily lives. And it's something that would be so easy to sort of do. And it just baffles me why it's been thrown in the bin. you know, you can harp on about the rental market collapsing and how unfair it is on landlords all you like, but ultimately the rental market's collapsing anyway because the Tories crashed the economy last year. I think it's a year ago on Saturday, that happened, and we're still living with the consequences. And also, forgive me, I don't have much sympathy for landlords anyway. That's just my personal opinion. Sorry if there are any landlords listening. I'm sure you're lovely.
But, you know, come on. Okay, let's move on to what people have said about this. Now, before we go on to what the people who don't like this have said, let's look at the people who have come out in support of this, shall we? First up, Donald Trump. Which is really all you need to like know about it. Donald Trump said, Rishi Sunak is smart to take on the climate alarmists.
Very mean.
I saw Nigel Farage also tweeted in support of this, but what he didn't support was the fact that they were still trying to achieve net zero. Oh, by the way, Nigel Farage is probably going to set up a new party that's going to be specifically aimed at being anti-net zero. So we might be seeing a referendum about that in like 10 years or so, which will be fun. Richard Tice has previously said, show some courage, Prime Minister, show some guts, scrap the whole net zero. Yeah, he's come out in the past to being very, very anti-net zero, saying that it'll bring costs on the common man, and that's not what we need right now, which seems to be like the main argument against net zero. But yeah, I ha can't find anything specific, but I imagine he's very pleased about these rollbacks, but wants them to go further. Anyway, let's have a look at who didn't like this. And I feel like we could just like simplify this by going literally everybody else.
Most sensible human beings that acknowledge that we need to do something about climate change, and actually that reaching net zero by 2050 is still not quite enough. It should be earlier than that. But starting
I'd
with
say 2035, but you know, that's just me. As a Green member, I feel, do you mind if I go first to say what one of my co-leaders said?
course.
So, in responding, this is, by the way, an official statement put on the Green Party website. Responding to the news that the Prime Minister Rishi Sunak is due to weaken the government's net zero policies, Green P Party co-leader Carla Denyer said, this is nothing short of economic and environmental vandalism. It will mean higher energy bills, fewer jobs, and lost investment, all while weakening the UK's climate action even further. Households are already paying more than they should be to heat their homes because of the last Conservative government's, because the last time the Conservatives decided to cut the green cap, while businesses are crying out for more certainty from the government over green transition, so which clearly needs to happen. So basically, what we've been saying. That was said by Carla Denyer, friend of West England Bylines. Hello, Carla. Now, you, as a member of the Labour Party, who I'm going to be very polite about from now on, I promise.
Well,
what do Labour say?
unsurprisingly, they're also not happy with this. And there was fighting talk from Ed Miliband last week. He said
I'm
he would.
sure Rishi Sunak is quaking in his boots.
Hey,
No offense to Mr. Miliband. I'm sure he's lovely.
well, he's the shadow climate secretary, and he has said that he would relish the idea of fighting an election on net zero. And he went on to say, Rishi Sunak is talking about the cost to working people, but he's the richest prime minister that we've ever had. Is incredibly out of touch. My understanding is that Labour would revert to the 2030 deadline, so bringing it back forward to where it used to be.
Yeah, that's more understanding as well.
And unsurprisingly, as with a lot of stuff Labour says at the moment, they will unveil their plans on gas boilers and heat pumps closer to the election. So it's a
Yeah,
bit
what was that going to be? Because I've heard all sorts of things. I've heard November this year. I've heard at the same time of the local elections. I've heard November next year. I'm just kind of just, yeah, like we, I think we both agree that what we really need right now is a general election. Because right now we have a prime minister who has gotten to where he is. And let's be honest here. He's gotten to where he is because he got a quarter of a million votes, which got him second place in the Conservative popularity contest. And the only reason why he's Prime Minister is because the person who got first had policies that were so bad, it literally made everybody lose faith in the British economy and crushed it. So he's not making these policies for the general population. He's making these policies for Conservative backers and Conservative members, which, yes, if he was elected Prime Minister in a general election, he would also probably be doing. But the Prime Minister has a responsibility to everybody, not just his voters, even people who didn't vote for him. That's the point of being Prime Minister. And right now, I feel like we don't have a PM who cares about us. The thing that always stands out to me in the past couple of weeks is when he announced it on his little head teacher plaque. I don't know what it's called.
Lectin. It's
Thank
elect.
you. His little head teacher lectern. Thank you. By the way, he could have at least made it an interesting design. Liz Truss at least had an interesting designed lectern. I'll give her that. But like when he made the announcement, he had a little slogan. And I think it was
Long-term decisions for a brighter future.
long-term decisions for a brighter future, even though this is the exact opposite. This is short-term. This is it's short-term. It's short-term because he honestly believes that after the by-elections, a fantastic thing to do would be based it all on like this anti-Ubers movement. And it's going to cost us. Not like OAPs, not like 50-year-olds. It's going to cost us, you and me, 18 to 35-year-olds the most, because we are going to be people who will bear the brunt of this long after the people who make the decisions now will be gone.
And the
And
argument,
honestly, I'm kind of scared about that.
and there's an argument here as well that this is just a delaying tactic because if it will be implemented by the next government, which is likely to be a Labour one, if Rishi Sunak, he's taken a bet that the general population will not like these ideas. So he's betting that by pushing it back and pushing the targets back, and the Conservatives likely not be in government at that point. If it's unpopular, it will fall at Labour's door, not his, not the Conservatives' door. And just to follow up on a point you made, like you said, the Prime Minister has a duty to govern and make decisions on behalf of every citizen of the country. They also have a responsibility to make sure that we're safe and people can live healthy lives without fear of, a fire burning down their house or a flood taking their, destroying all their belongings. This is just an abject failure of responsibility, an abject dereliction of duty in one, tackling climate change, which would make us safer and a more prosperous place to live, but also it's failing communities across the world who are suffering from the impacts of climate change right now. Look at what happened in Europe over the summer. There were fires everywhere, and that's only going to get worse. So I don't know how conservatives who support this move or shift in policy can sleep at night knowing that that's going on at the same time.
There's this cartoon that I've been thinking about a lot lately, and it's of a man at a campfire gathered around are like four children, and it's in the middle of a completely destroyed city. I think it's a Mac cartoon. And he says, yes, we destroy the planet, but for a few short decades, we managed to create some very good investments. I don't know why I've been thinking about that.
Don't know either. It's very apt.
Yeah, yeah, well, I feel like this is literally just another episode of me like rambling my fears, hoping someone will listen.
This hasn't been a particularly uplifting episode, listeners. We do apologize. But this isn't an uplifting topic, it's a serious one. And we should all be concerned by what was announced last week. We really should.
Look, I don't care who wins the next general election, if I'm being perfectly honest. Like, admittedly, I did leave the Labour Party because I didn't like where they're heading and all like the back rolling they've done on certain policies. But quite frankly, I don't care if they win. I don't care if the Lib Dems like pull off like the steal of the century and win. Because literally anybody will be better than who we currently have. Because I'll at the very least be able to go to sleep at night, not having to worry about whether or not the country will be on fire next year. I mean, it probably will be, but you know, it won't be their fault.
The takeaway from this is bring on a general election and please let it be soon.
Please, please, and thank you. Because literally anything will be better than what we currently have. So, when do you think a general election will come as like a short little end to this?
It's difficult to say, but I mean, the deadline for it is January 2025.
Yep,
So
January 2025 at the very, very latest. But I've seen a lot of rumors. I've seen like a rumor, legit, not a legit rumor. I've legitimately seen a rumor that says it's going to happen in 2 months' time.
I saw
In
that too.
on the 23rd of November, because that's what conservative members are pushing. You know, and you know, I can honestly see that. I can honestly see him, Rishi Sunak, creating new policies as like the start of like a brand new thing, because this literally happened in 2016. David Cameron came up with a brand new EU referendum deal and just went, cool, we'll have a referendum about that backfired on him. We can only hope the history repeats itself.
Yeah, and I suspect, I don't think we'll be waiting long past May next year, because that's when
I
the.
mean, I can honestly see them doing it at the same time as like the mayoral elections, the local elections. So my cautious bet will be on May 2024.
I'm
I
with you.
hope November 2023, but I'm not an optimist. So don't if the listeners could tell that after 30 minutes of me rambling.
But if you do agree, and anyone listening, if you do agree remotely with anything that we've talked about and how awful this actually is for the UK in meeting net zero and tackling climate change, do something about it. Don't just listen to this podcast and say, oh, that's a shame. Don't just listen to us talking like two depressed people in their bedrooms.
Two depressed millennials in their bedrooms on a podcast. Novel thing.
Go on protest marches, write to your elected members of parliament or.
Particularly if you live in an area with a Tory MP. Because if
Absolutely.
you don't live in an area with a Tory MP, you're likely preaching to the choir. But
Absolutely.
yes, we have to be active about this. And I know this is going to sound ironic given what I've just said, but we can't really give in to despair. We can't just go, okay, the future's been decided. No point in fighting it. We have to believe that there is a better option out there. Even if you're like me, And you're just going, oh God, what the hell are we going to do? Take this as a sign to like be more active politically, because that's the only way we're going to get people to listen.
Definitely.
And on that note, that brings us to the end. I have been Julian Greenbank, living in Bristol.
And this has been Chris Davis from London.
Thank you very much for listening to us, listeners of the Bylines Network podcast. I do encourage you to subscribe to the podcast, wherever you get your podcasts from. If you agree with the Bylines Network message, we do have a crowdfunding campaign, which will be linked below. You can donate literally whatever you want. There isn't literally no price too small to fund journalism. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next month.